If you have your Bibles this morning, you can turn to the book of Ruth. We're in chapter 2. Ruth chapter 2. I think we left off with verse 7 last week, so we'll just pick up right there. If you're new to our church, our habit, our practice is to preach through God's Word a verse at a time. Depending on the text, some weeks we'll only cover one verse or a part of a verse. Other weeks, several. This is a narrative. This is a story told by a narrator. So it's not set up as a lecture to teach with every sentence, or every couple of sentences don't have a truth to teach. So we're going through the story. We're kind of describing what it's doing and trying to explain things that may not be common knowledge to people who live here in the United States during this time, because it's set in a much different time and a much different place. And then we'll try to draw out some truths from it that perhaps are applicable to us today as 21st century Christians. So that's what we're doing, and we're in chapter 2. We'll begin with verse 8 in the book of Ruth. It says this. It says, "Then Boaz said to Ruth, 'Now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn.' Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, 'Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?' But Boaz answered her, 'All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge.' Then she said, 'I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants.'" Okay, we'll stop there. So last week, as we continued through this story of this young lady, Ruth, we learned of her initiative, her industriousness, as she decided, "I'm going to get up and I'm going to go glean in the fields." And we talked about what gleaning was. It was that part of the law. God put this in the law to take care of people just like Ruth, the poor, the struggling, maybe foreigners or strangers to the area. And the law stated that if you owned a field, you were not supposed to harvest it right up to the corners, but leave a little bit. And as you were bundling your grain into these bundles and then into sheaves, if some of it fell out, you were to leave it there so that people could come back and it would provide for them. So we learned about that, and that this is what Ruth decided to do. And then we were introduced to Boaz, who noticed her in the field and asked his foreman who she was. And he went on to describe her quite favorably to him. And that brings us today to the first conversation between Ruth and Boaz. And we mentioned in one of our messages that the whole book of Ruth is mostly conversation between people, which is a contrast to what we looked at in Ephesians and in many other books like it in the New Testament, where it is a letter where the author is just speaking to his audience and teaching them through it. This is made up primarily of conversations between people. And so today we look at the first conversation between Boaz and Ruth, and let's see what we can get from this. We'll begin. Verse 8, it just says, "Then Boaz said to Ruth, 'Now listen, my daughter, do not go glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women.'" So he addresses Ruth as "my daughter." And this is probably in reference to the age difference. It's believed that Boaz was nearer to the age of Naomi than to Ruth, so somewhat older than Ruth. And we see this again in chapter 3. If you look down to verse 10 of chapter 3, you'll see the same reference again. But it's a fatherly expression. It's what would be expected. It is the appropriate way for an older man to address a younger woman. So it's also an affectionate address, as it is fatherly in nature. So it's affectionate, especially when you consider that Ruth is a Moabite. She's a stranger. She is a foreigner. So it's quite unusual to address a foreigner in this way. And then finally, to address Ruth as my daughter, it implies a protective and a caring attitude, the way you would care for your own daughter. So this is the first thing we get, is that there's a little bit more of a relationship, at least beginning. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. So Boaz instructs Ruth, stay in my field. There's no reason for you to go from field to field, as the gleaners might normally do, but you stay in my field and stay near to my young women. And this simple statement by Boaz is giving to Ruth both provision and protection in just that one statement. And it goes on into verse 9. It kind of explains what I mean when I say that. Verse 9 says, let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. So here we see provision. Boaz is providing in a couple of ways. One is he is allowing her to continually glean in his field. She doesn't need to go from field to field, but she can stay there. Also, he's providing water for her. So this is part of his provision. And then, of course, he provides protection in two ways. One is by telling her to stay close to his young women, which is sort of protection by inclusion. And then finally, he mentions that he asked the young men not to touch her. So both provision and protection here, and we need to keep in mind that Boaz has just met Ruth. So this, to me, seems like the kind of things you would say to someone you've known for a long time. I'm going to offer you both protection and provision because I care about you. I'm not treating you as a foreigner or as a stranger, but I'm treating you as part of our family. And yet Boaz has just met her. All right. So we can learn a little bit about the harvesting process. There's not a lot taught to us here, and some we learn from just history and knowing what goes on. But it appears here that Boaz has both male and female harvesters. He refers to both groups, but he doesn't identify what they do, except that he says that the men draw the water and bring it for all the workers. So what would happen is the harvesting would be carried out by two groups. The first group would go through the field and cut down the grain with a sickle, and they would just leave it there, and they would keep moving through the field. And the second group would come behind them and would bundle the grain up into bundles, and then even larger bundles, the sheaves. And it looks like it may have been the ladies that were doing the bundling, because that's who Boaz said to stay with the young women. And by allowing them, again, by allowing her to stay close, then anything they dropped as they were doing their job, she was free to pick up. She would be included in the group. She would look like one of Boaz's servants, perhaps. But this would allow her to glean more than a typical gleaner would, who would go from field to field, maybe not even the first gleaner to get to the field. So people have already gone through in front. Here he's saying, you follow right behind my young women and you pick up what you need. This, it's hard for us to understand because this culture is not the one that we live in or one we can really understand or appreciate, but this was nothing but unadulterated grace on the part of Boaz to give this to Ruth. And so Boaz told his young men not to touch her. And there's a couple of nuances to that. Of course, the obvious one is not to molest her in any way, not to hinder her, not to harm her. But the other thing is that the word touch there implies to remove. And so what he's saying is don't kick her out of the fields. In fact, later in verse 15 and 16, he again instructs his young men to allow Ruth to glean among the sheaves and says, and do not reproach her. So when he says don't touch her, he's really saying just leave her alone and let her glean. Don't remove her from the fields. These men were evidently part of Boaz's security team. They made sure no one was in the field who was not authorized to be there during the harvesting. But so he's providing protection for her in that way. And the final thing that Boaz said to her was to help herself to the water. And the water was obviously drawn for the workers. And he's saying, you can have this. So all of this, when you look at all of the provision and all the protection, it really gives Ruth the same status or the same privilege as one of Boaz's servants, one of his workers. Quite an unusual privilege to be given to a stranger and a foreigner. But this is what Boaz is extending to Ruth here. So let's look at Ruth's reaction in verse 10. Again, this is just a conversation going back and forth. Verse 10, then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner? So Ruth's response was just pure humility. She bowed down and touched her face to the ground. And this was a common gesture in the ancient Near East. And we see it frequently in the Bible. In Genesis chapter 19, verse 1, it says, the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed himself with his face to the earth. Over in Genesis chapter 42, verse 6, now Joseph was governor over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land, and Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. And then later over in Joshua chapter 5, verse 14, and he said, no, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshiped and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? And then finally in 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 2, and on the third day, behold, a man came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dirt on his head. And when he came to David, he fell to the ground and paid homage. So you can see that in all of these instances, and here in the book of Ruth, this was an act of deep respect. It was also an acknowledgement of maybe a sense of weakness or dependence on the person doing it. And that is what Ruth chose to do. She bowed and touched her face to the earth. And she asks, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner? And I'll tell you what, that's a good question, because she was a foreigner and was a stranger and had no rights. A widow who was a foreigner and a stranger, no status, no privilege, no hope. And yet Boaz treated her with grace. Now, when it says, why have I found favor in your eyes? This is frequently used idiom in the Hebrew language, and it expresses appreciation. It's actually still used today. So she's thankful and grateful, but she's also, I think, genuinely surprised that anyone should take notice of her. She just went to the fields to glean some grain. But her short statement really showed how surprised or bewildered she was. And it really sets a contrast between her reaction to her circumstances and Naomi's just a bit earlier. You remember Naomi was shocked and surprised and wondered why God would deal so harshly with her. And here we see Ruth bewildered and surprised and perhaps shocked at why Boaz would treat her with such grace and such mercy with her, his provision and protection of her. Now, Ruth may have expected to be treated with suspicion, being a foreigner, maybe alienated in Bethlehem, but instead, Boaz greeted her warmly, and he accepted her as a person to be welcomed, not as a person to be shunned, not as an alien to be kept at a distance. What we see here is the narrator is really creating in our minds as readers, he's creating a favorable impression of Ruth. She's hardworking, industrious. She doesn't take things for granted when someone treats her kindly. She's grateful, bows before him. She appreciated every act of kindness shown to her. And I'm not sure she fully understood how gracious this was, being a Moabite, to come and to be treated like this. Maybe she did understand. I mean, there's one sense where she acknowledges, why are you treating me this way given that I'm a foreigner? Maybe it was weighing on her mind. And this seems to be kind of the mindset of an exile. It's the burden that they would have to carry. And maybe even a few weeks or a few months or a few years of residence. Don't erase that fact that you're an outsider. You're not one of us. Rural communities are sometimes like that. Even rural communities around here can be very exclusive of people outside the community and very inclusive of those who were born and lived there. But Ruth the Moabite would always be a foreigner in Bethlehem. So even though it can be difficult being a foreigner, being a stranger, this story kind of shows a theme that recurs throughout the Bible, and that is God's care for the vulnerable, for the weak, for the stranger, for the sojourner. We see in Psalm 72, verse 1, "Give the king your justice, O God, and your righteousness to the royal son. May he judge your people with righteousness and your poor with justice. Let the mountains bear prosperity for the people and the hills in righteousness. May he defend the cause of the poor of the people and give deliverance to the children of the needy and crush the oppressor." And then over in Isaiah chapter 10, verse 1, it says, "Woe to those who decree iniquitous decrees and the writers who keep writing oppression, to turn aside the needy from justice and to rob the poor of my people of their right, that widows may be their spoil and that they may make the fatherless their prey." So here you see warnings against treating the poor poorly. You see that Scripture is teaching that we are to have a special place in our heart for the needy and the poor. Even in the New Testament, we see this in Jesus' story of the judgment day. In Matthew chapter 25, he says this, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world.'" Does anyone else have the Keith Green song going through their head right now? Do y'all even know what I'm talking about? You need to find that. He puts this entire passage to a song. It's a little more dramatic than my reading this morning. Verse 35, "For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me." And then he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food, and I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me, naked, and you did not clothe me, sick and in prison, and you did not visit me." Then they will also answer, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister to you?" And then he will answer them, saying, "Truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me." And those will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. So Jesus is pretty blunt about his people caring for the least of these, the needy. In this Old Testament setting, it would be the foreigner and the widow the stranger. So both the Old Testament and the New Testament speak to the importance of this, and we see it in this passage in Ruth. So when we think of a stranger today, perhaps it appeals to your sympathies. Someone comes here from another country, they don't speak the language well, maybe they're not, you know, they're not used to the Texas culture and all that that entails, and so it may evoke in you sympathy. But it did not do that to people in ancient times. There's a Greek saying that says, every man is a wolf to the one he does not know. And that was a mindset of the day. The Romans, just like the Hebrews, used the same word for stranger and enemy. So Ruth's situation, while you're thinking, man, if I was Boaz, I would have done the same thing. I would have felt sympathy for her in that culture in that day. That was not the case. Strangers were, you were to be wary of them. She was from Moab. That was a country God cursed, didn't he? And we should probably stay away from her. Ruth understood this. And I think she really did have every expectation that people would turn their backs on her. And she viewed herself perhaps as having a stigma or a stain. But despite that, Boaz showed her grace. The point I want to get across is I think we should be able to identify with this. Because we had a stigma. We had a stain, and that stain was the stain of sin. And despite that stigma that we had, Christ still died for us. Romans chapter 5, verse 8 says that God shows his love for us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Which that is such a profound verse that we take for granted so often. Because it doesn't say you have to get your life together. You have to get your affairs in order. Your behavior needs to be exemplary. Your heart needs to be pure. And then maybe I'll send my son to die for you. No, Christ died for us while we were sinners. And a picture of that here is Boaz showing grace to Ruth, even though she was a Moabite, a stranger, a foreigner. I wonder if our response to God's grace is at all similar to Ruth's response. Again, in verse 10, it says, she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? So Ruth fell to her knees, signaling both humility and thankfulness. Our response to God should be of like kind. Because if you really want to start weighing things, his grace to us far surpassed the grace that Boaz showed to Ruth. So next, we'll look at Boaz's response. Verses 11 and 12. But Boaz answered her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Okay, so now we're on the other side of the conversation. This is Boaz's response. He seemed to know an awful lot about Ruth. And there's all kinds of conjecture among scholars as to where he learned this. Some believe that he learned it from his foreman, who learned it from questioning Ruth herself, which we saw in a few verses back. Others speculate that he must have talked to Naomi, which is certainly possible. The narrator doesn't say that. But in these types of stories, you know, the narrator may not necessarily tell us every single thing that happened. So it's possible, I suppose, that he did that. But what we do know is that he seems to know a lot about her because he tells it right back to her. I know what you did. When Boaz says these words, it brings to our mind the story of another man in ancient Israel. Because you see, Israel's story began with a man leaving home. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, it says, now the Lord said to Abram, Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So just like Ruth, Abraham had lived as a stranger. He moved from his home, but he enjoyed the blessings of God. In fact, I would say Ruth was unaware that her story was similar to that of Abraham. And the difference with Ruth is that she did not enjoy the promise of blessing that Abraham did, which is perhaps why when that blessing started to come her way, she was bewildered and shocked and surprised. Boaz closed his comments to Ruth with a blessing, which what that was is he's expressing a wish or a prayer that Ruth would be rewarded for her deeds, that she would be paid in full. And this is the second one of these blessings that Ruth has received. If you recall, back in chapter 1, there was a blessing pronounced on her by Naomi. In verse 8, it says, "But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Go, return each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me.'" So again, here's this wish or a prayer in this regard that God would deal kindly with Ruth. Boaz's request is that he would repay her for all that she had done. So the two of them, Naomi and Boaz, ground their blessing in Ruth's own faithfulness. And it's interesting to me, I think we may have mentioned this a week ago or so, but Boaz didn't say, "God, because she's been through so much, she lost her husband and her father-in-law, and things are just really rough for her, so why don't you bless her?" He could have focused on all of her troubles, on her great loss, but instead, what Boaz focuses on as the basis or the grounds for his blessing to Ruth was her sacrificial love for Naomi. "I know what you did for Naomi." It was not on her loss. And there may be a lesson in there as to what we should focus on in our situation, because we love to go run to our hardships, and we want people to know about all of our hardships and all of our loss. We're in a hurry to tell people. We're in a hurry to post it somewhere so that many people can see it. Boaz here didn't focus on that at all, but rather on her faithfulness and on her sacrificial love. It's ironic. I was talking to a friend of mine last night about how prayer and our works, our activity, what's the relationship, how they work together for God to accomplish his purposes here on this earth. And we didn't figure it out. I mean, it's complicated, right? We're told to pray, but we're told that God is sovereign as well. And so there's some tension there, right? There's a mystery. And so we discussed that for a bit. But here, it's interesting to me, it's a bit ironic that through Boaz's kindness to Ruth, the Lord has already begun to answer his own prayer for her. I mean, he's praying that she would be repaid, that she would be blessed. And through his own kindness to her, we see the beginnings of the answer to that very prayer. Boaz also mentioned that he may have heard something about Ruth's faith. He mentioned that she had come to seek refuge under the wings of God in verse 12. And wings in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew language, were a suggestive metaphor of protection, of strength. You were protected under the wings of God. We actually looked at that during our study on the Psalms, because you see that there a lot. And verse 12, I think, reveals perhaps Boaz's personal theology, which is something along the line that God does reward those who take shelter in him. That's what he's counting on in pronouncing this blessing. Ruth has been faithful to her mother-in-law. Even though these things happened, she loved her sacrificially and came here with her to seek shelter under your wings, God. So bless her. Repay her faithfulness. That seems to be the nature of his blessing. When we see take refuge under the wings of God, that simply just means to be protected. So Boaz believed that by coming to Israel, Ruth had placed herself under God's protection, under his wings, the same way that a hen would shelter her chicks. So then we see this term full reward. He wants Ruth to receive her full reward. And what that means in the Hebrew language is wages. And whenever we see wages, what we understand is that those are deserved. Now, we're not talking about grace now. Grace is getting something you don't deserve. Wages are getting what you do. In fact, the famous New Testament passage that we all run to when we hear about the word wages is in Romans chapter 6, where it says the wages of our sin, the things that we deserve because of our sin, is death. But then it goes on to talk about the gift of God, which would by definition be grace, getting something we don't deserve. So here he's asking that she be given what she deserves, that she needs to be repaid for her generosity. Maybe the reason he feels this way is God has been good to Boaz. He sees the blessing that they have received because the famine ended and he's got a harvest. He's got enough harvest that he's not worried about these gleaners coming in. So finally, we'll look at Ruth's reply. This is the last segment of the conversation. This is in verse 13. Then she said, I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. And this is where you just have to kind of step back and try to place yourself in Ruth's shoes. Can you imagine the impact of these words that she has just heard from Boaz? Ruth, the outsider. These may have been, in fact, the first kind words she had heard since leaving Moab. More than that, it was a blessing. This man was asking God to bless her, asking for God's favor upon her life, just like she was a member of the covenant community. I mean, that had to have had an impact on her, because Boaz recognized the sincerity of her words to Naomi. He saw that she was leaving and turning her back not only on the country and her people, but on their gods. And she was looking to the God of Israel for refuge. And so he prayed for her. He prayed that God would grant her the protection that she was seeking. This could have been, and again, this is just trying to put yourself in her shoes, this may have been the gracious response or the warm response from her commitment to Naomi on that road to Bethlehem that she deserved but never received. Because her commitment, where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. And your God will be my God. Your people will be my people. Ruth didn't respond to, or Naomi didn't respond to that, remember? She was in sort of stunned silence. So maybe Ruth saw, well, this is kind of what I expected from Naomi. This is the warm response, perhaps, from that Bethlehem Road conversation. Before I close today, I'm going to ask our musicians to come to the front as we prepare to close with a song of commitment. But I want to point out just a couple of things before we go. It's really no wonder that Ruth was comforted by this, maybe perhaps even a little overawed by Boaz's generosity, because here again, she's an outsider and she had been made to feel welcome to come in. This woman who had come seeking Israel's God, maybe for the first time, had gotten a hint that there might be a place here among God's people for me. Now it says, she says that you've spoken kindly to me. Now that phrase has got lots of hidden meaning. It literally means spoken to my heart. So you have spoken to my heart, Boaz. And it can mean things like to encourage. It can mean to provide comfort. But it also implies the beginning of a deeper relationship. And I think all of those are included in this passage. We see that his words were very encouraging and comforting to Ruth. But we also see the early stages, perhaps, of Boaz and Ruth developing a relationship of trust. So the thing I want to leave you with today, I'm really struck by Ruth's question in verse 10. And I think that question ought to be on the lips of every believer. When we come before our God, when we come before the one who has provided for us and who protects us, I think the question we should be considering is, why have I found favor in your eyes? It's nothing but God's grace. I mean, I don't know the details of all of your lives, but I do know the details of mine. And there's nothing in my life that would cause God to do for me what he's done. And when you stop and think about it, the examples of God's favor on your life are endless. But today, we can just focus on one, and that is his great gift of salvation. Because there's a passage in Ephesians that deals with our salvation, but puts it in a language that is startlingly similar to Ruth's plight. Ruth, a widow, no means of support, traveling from her old country to Israel. Now she's a foreigner and a stranger and an outcast. Not much hope. In fact, I would say she had no hope. She was reduced to practically begging, going into fields and picking up what the harvesters dropped. That's the same condition we were in as unsaved sinners. And Paul in Ephesians says this, and I'll close with this passage. Ephesians chapter 2. You should remember this. We studied this, right, in Ephesians? A year ago, maybe. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12. Remember that you were at that time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who were once far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. Let's pray together.